This is Write Your Own Story, Three Keys to Rise and Thrive in Life and Business. I'm your host, Rebecca Fleetwood Hessian. Hi, I'm Rebecca Fleetwood Hessian. I am the CEO of a company called WeThrive.live, a keynote speaker and an executive coach. And you are tuning in to our Future of Work series here on the podcast. I am passionate about the shift that we are in as a society. And I believe it's the greatest shift that we've been in since the shift from the agricultural age to the industrial age model of work, where the work construct has such a significant impact on society. And in 2020, we experienced a global shutdown, global trauma, which led us into years worth of reflection on what success really is and what we want our lives to be. And I believe that we're still in this bit of chaotic shift, trying to decide what the right answer is. And what I'm seeing is a much needed and necessary shift to where our sense of worth and our sense of value doesn't come from our achievements and our work title, but comes from us knowing us. And I believe that is the shift that we have needed for some time, because the way that we were working was leading us straight to an epidemic of burnout. And while this time of chaotic shift is full of uncertainty and many leaders trying to figure out what is the answer, I wholeheartedly believe that the future belongs to those leaders who are willing to be creatives, who are willing to create the future of work. And I want to be a part of that effort. And so this series is dedicated to interviewing people and asking them, what do you think the future of work could and should be? What problems should we solve? What ideas should we consider? And by doing this series, it will lead us into our own sense of reflection as leaders and as employees. And what do we want? How do we want work to feel? And as we make this shift, I believe as we change the work, we can change the world into a society that honors each of our uniqueness and honors the value that we bring into an organization. So if we can change the work, we can change the world. Because, you know, making money just ought to feel better. So I'm glad you're here.
One of the things I've absolutely loved the most about this Future of Work series is getting to meet people that I never would have had the chance to meet otherwise.
So I put out a shout out on LinkedIn and said, who wants to talk about the future of work? And just signed up people, sent them a link to schedule. So this is an example of the very first conversation that I've had with Brendan Rolston from New Zealand is today on the show. And it's so fun to get to know people in this way and really understand a little bit about who they are and the context of what they care about, in addition just to what you see on LinkedIn in terms of their company name and their title. So Brendan owns a company, a marketing technology company in New Zealand, and is really looking to better understand the trends and what's happening and how he can not only help his company grow, but it's obvious from this interview that he cares a whole lot about the people in the process of that. So I think you're going to love hearing from Brendan. I've enjoyed meeting him, and we've made a vow to stay connected in some way. And so I hope you'll go to LinkedIn and follow him. He's putting out some great content and has a lot to share on the episode today. Here we go.
So I'm thrilled that you responded to my LinkedIn shout out, like, who wants to talk about the future of work? Who are you and why does that matter to you? Let's just start with that.
Absolutely. Yeah, I'm Brendan Rolston. So I'm tuning in from Auckland, New Zealand. And I just sort of was browsing through LinkedIn, and I'm doing a bit of research myself around sort of environmental social governance, sort of ESG, as part of the progression of the business. And yeah, I just saw your post and I thought, sounds interesting. And I thought, I've never done a podcast before. So, wow, let's do it. I just thought it makes sense to have a chat. You know, when you do something like this, it kind of makes you go a little bit deeper do a little bit more thinking and planning around it. So it's a good thing just sometimes just to jump in and go, yeah, I'll have a go.
Oh, I love that. And that was really my intent in asking people to come on the show, is I'm in the process of writing my second book around what I call the age of humanity, that in a post-2020 world, the expectations of life and work have forever shifted. And whether leaders are willing to acknowledge that or not, it's a different story. But I wanted to not just look at the research that big companies are putting out and really trying to drive what the future work needs to be. I want word on the street. What are you feeling? What are you thinking? What's working? What's not? And let's just, like you said, go a little deeper than our traditional day-to-day conversations have allowed us to, because we really have the opportunity to create a change in society, which is my premise, that if we change the way that we work, by nature, more than half of the world works and it impacts our life so dramatically. Why don't we get really intentional about building commerce around community without sacrificing the bottom line? I'm a business consultant by trade. I'm a capitalist. Let's make some money and do great things with it. Exactly why I wanted to have the conversation was just riff on it. Tell me a little bit about your background so that we know the context by which your thoughts and comments, where does that come from? Tell us a little bit about you.
Yeah, certainly. So I have a marketing agency in the communications and technology space, and I've been doing business for about 25 years. And we started off as a manufacturing organization in a sort of a sunset industry, which is the old business of direct mail. When we kicked off, it was all go. You know, we had about 50 staff and, you know, it was a real growth sector. But then we had it in 2008, GFC, later a bit of COVID. And in New Zealand, we've been very high adopters of digital technology. So we saw our traditional business just naturally decline through the sector. And it's just a natural thing to happen as digital grew. And so probably about 2008, I made a transition to moving into digital, sort of like just looking more forward about where the business needs to be. We moved out of the manufacturing sector, become more agency focused, kept close to our customers, developed some technology based on customer demand and repurposed our skill sets. And so now we're kind of like an interesting company. You know, we're providing consultancy to corporates around communication automation. We're promoting some technology. We're excited about entering the US market with a couple of tech pieces at the moment. And yeah, I guess, you know, where I'm at the moment with my business, we're a smallish kind of agency. We've got about 9 or 10 on the team. So, you know, we are like all hands on. But what I'm looking at the moment is the future of business and how we stay relevant, because there's so much change going on with, you know, automation. If you're working with larger corporates, there's demands from corporates on how you run your business, how you're certified. And there's also going to be big challenges, I think, around maintaining and, you know, winning new talent. So, you know, I'm thinking about how do we position our business for growth and how do we maintain relevant, and also how do we have the best people to serve the opportunities in the future?
One thing you said that I think is really important to the future of work is that you have repurposed the talent into a different way to use that talent to serve. And I think that is the future. I think in the past, the company was the nucleus. People wanted to get into a certain company. And now people are realizing that it wasn't the safety, security that they thought it was going to be. And I think now the nucleus will be, who am I? What are my gifts and talents? And now where and am I going to use those? Which doesn't have to fall into a traditional gig economy, but I think people will be much more adapting to change and navigating their own change like you have done as a business. You've said, you know what? We don't want to serve this market anymore, but we've got some great talent. How can we use that talent differently? And I want to see it to where individuals feel that sense of responsibility to be like, now where am I going to go use my gifts and talents? I don't want to be tied to a company for decades, which is also a challenge for a company, I get. But I think leaders and managers and companies are going to have to shift to running. Right now, I run a department or I run a company to say, I lead people, eyeball to eyeball, heartbeat to heartbeat, individuals, unique individuals, not a group of people. And so I like what you said about, you know, we just changed, we shifted. And I think that's a beautiful way to use whatever you have differently and well. More people, I think, could benefit from that.
Yeah, I think so. I think, you know, we're moving into, you know, like you say, I think we're transitioning and we need to transition from being sort of like a corporate dominated come to work and this is what you do versus understanding that it's going to be an employee workforce orientated workplace. And we, as leaders, we need to prepare the environment for that. You know, the employees are going to be transitional. Businesses are going to continue to evolve, grow, and change. So the nature of their workforce over time will just change, which means that as an employee in the workforce, you do need to be either growing with the organization or, like you say, sort of preparing your own personal strengths and where you're going to move forward in your career. And there's a huge amount of opportunity right now for forward planning and career planning. There's challenges for employees, there's challenges for business, that there's a huge amount of opportunity for both if they get it right.
And I just feel like, to me, this is the biggest shift we've had since the shift from the agricultural age to the industrial age. I think we are in a time of reckoning. I think there's this conversation that currently is, do we go back to the office or do we work from home? Is the surface level of what we're really talking about, where individuals are saying, I no longer am willing to sacrifice this many hours of my day or my life to do that, to be in an office where I've proven to you for the past however many years that I don't need to be. So I don't think it's about where you sit and do your work. I think it's very much about individuals want to be individuals again.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's an interesting space, the work from home versus the office. And, you know, it depends on obviously the kind of work you do. Like production work is you got to turn up and do the work. And sometimes when you're doing more detailed collaboration, you know, being face to face is so much easier than communicating digitally. And so I feel that the future is really integrating the work from home when you can, when it makes sense. But it's actually, how do you bring teams together to collaborate, build culture? And, you know, I was thinking about just the other day that some of the challenges from working at home is not everyone has the benefit of a nice home office, you know, the aesthetics of home office. And sometimes it can, you know, going to the office can literally be an escape from the home, you know, the manic.
The kids or the dogs or something that you need to break
from. The kind of everything that comes with home, family, and life, and vice versa as well. You know, the manic of business, sometimes just being home, not having to be in traffic, you can put your head down, get a lot of work done. And I think businesses really will need to look at that balance. And I'm seeing more organizations. I was just talking to an organization yesterday and they close their office on Thursdays. And they're sort of there, you know, once a week, everyone works from home. Other organization, they come to the office twice a week. And I think everyone's trying to feel out what works and importantly, how do you maintain productivity and some sort of control, but also letting go of control at the same time. So it's a creative dilemma for everybody and there's a lot of trust. You know, I think that's where organizations come back down to their purpose and the culture and the buy-in, because we used to manage people, now we need to have their, you know, their heart and their buy-in to get the job done.
I use this framework that helps me guide my clients, and it's very simply called business is human. But on one side, the business needs to control, measure, and optimize. We need goals, metrics, dashboards, systems, processes. Those are good business practices. But we as humans, we're personal, emotional, and social. And so these are needs as well. And so in order to integrate those needs is the key. And when I think about work from home or being in the office, you absolutely hit the nail on the head that in order to collaborate in an effective way, our nervous systems have to be in the same room enough that we vibe with each other. We literally energetically have some sort of connection that later when we're on a Zoom call, we've got that connectivity. You know those teams, and you've probably been on them before, where they work together for so long they can almost finish each other's sentences, and they're just vibing. They get it together. You don't get that. You might get it over time, but our bodies don't read this as human to human. It's like, oh, she's watching TV because we're not in the same room. And so absolutely, if the job requires that kind of collaborative effort, you've got to get in a room together on a fairly regular basis.
Yeah. So really, culture becomes the new currency of business. And yeah, how do you, as a leader, create the vibe and the energy for teams just to collaborate and keep going forward and keep on the same page?
Have a reason to get together. Because what I'm hearing is that there's been some mandate back to work. Everybody loves a mandate, don't they? That already just says, I trust you, right?
That's right. Absolutely.
But saying you have to be in the office X number of days. But when they get to the office, there's no collaboration. People are going to their cubes that they used to work in. That makes zero sense to me. But it does make sense to me from a leadership perspective. If you have been rooted in the control mindset, then what your pattern of your brain is telling you is go back to the way it used to be, because that's the way that it works. And what I'm saying is the future of work isn't back there. It's something that we create in the future. And if you're trying to pull people back to the way it used to be, you're already way behind in building trust.
You're going to create some major problems, and you're going to become uncompetitive because, like I say, culture is the currency, and there's going to be a large shortage in workforce. You're coming up to 2030. I think there's going to be about 7 million jobs to be filled. So it's going to be in the US marketplace.
Okay, tell me about that.
Yeah, so from what I understand, that there is, there's a lot of growth coming in growth sectors. And I think those growth sectors, we're looking at adding about 13 million jobs by 2030 in the US marketplace. And then you've got the sectors which are on the decline, which will lose about 6 million jobs. And some of the research I was looking at is showing that between now and 2030, there's going to be about 12 million employees changing careers. So re-educating, deciding that, where I'm at now is not looking healthy for life or just for my interests. And so there's going to be a huge migration of workforce. And
I hadn't heard these numbers. That's great to hear.
Yeah,
I mean, not great, but good to know that that's what we're faced with, be aware.
Yeah, I was really surprised because, when AI came up over the last couple of years, I was going, wow, this is the biggest change that we've experienced since the birth of the internet. And my natural thinking was there's going to be a mass outage of workforce, and it is going to reduce hours significantly. But there's also so much growth forecast in the job market that the workforce is going to have the lead in choosing jobs. And it's also an amazing opportunity for professionals now, whoever now, to sort of look forward into their future and go, what do I want to do? Because I can guarantee whatever they want to do, if it's adding value, they will find work, because there's going to be a massive shortage of work. So that comes back to what you're saying about business is, if you are not the best place to work, you're not providing the best benefits, the best environment, you're just going to lose staff. And those organizations you're mentioning, and, we've seen a few come up on the internet, it's like, you've got to come back to work, to the office. They're going to lose out. It's going to be, if you're investing in those organizations, you got to really second guess how that organization works. And so I think it's exciting times for the workforce, extremely exciting times for the workforce, and very challenging times coming up for organizations. That's why I really think that there's got to be a sense of urgency around this for business. We have to act now to make sure we're running productively. We have to act now to make sure we've got the ultimate culture. If we don't, we're going to lose relevance very quickly, and we're going to lose out because we won't have staff to do the work we need them to do.
I'm going to say something that's going to aggravate some people, but here I go. I think there's a huge need for companies to understand the difference between a cult and a culture.
Mm-hmm.
Because...
Explain this to me.
Because sometimes I have seen companies try to use their culture as the way to control. whether expectations around people have to go to their happy hour fun events, because that's where you get to know people. And we offer these great things for you to participate in. And I've been in rooms where I was asked to come in to some of these companies and teach a class. And the employees, like you said, the workforce is starting to take more of their direction for themselves. These are young, at the time, I think, millennials, probably maybe, I don't know. I hate categorizing people in those ways, but new into work, just out of college. And they would say to me, I just want to go to the gym and go home and get to bed early. But I feel like I have to go out and have drinks with the boss in order to fit in here, or I'm not going to get a promotion, or I'm not going to get an opportunity. And so sometimes I think a company has wrapped themselves around, like, this is our thing. And if you want to be a part of this thing, you better understand that this is a thing, right? And what we're talking about, I think, collectively, we have a similar view, is that individuals want the choice of how they spend their time. They don't want to be a part of a thing unless it's saying, how can I come in and use my gifts and talents in a really beautiful way because I believe in what you're doing. I believe in the customers that you serve. I believe in the way that you do your work. I believe in you, but not because of your culture, but because of the work that we do or the way that we serve, I think has become more of the need from a cultural standpoint than I've created this Disney park environment that you need to come and punch your ticket every day and then go for a ride.
Yeah, that's really interesting. I haven't actually really thought a lot about that, but it sort of makes me reflect on, you know, you've got staff who do different types of work, and you could sort of classify introverts, extroverts. In our business, we have people, you know, teams processing data, doing development work. They generally like to get their head down and get on with the work. And then we've got sort of some outgoing staff, you know, front of office, they're out there doing communications, and they just want different things. And, you know, work party, we just have like lunches when we get together, and that's always fun. And listening to what you're saying about thinking about the diversity of the workforce and making sure you're letting them sort of have their own experience and creative expression in the business and how they bring culture to it, I think a lot involved in that is about good communication, right?
You've got to know the individual.
You got to. And that's where, I guess, the good old face-to-face conversations, surveying, you keep regularly engaged with your workforce so that you can ask the questions. I go back to a concert I went to. I should definitely know her name, famous young girl, took my daughter to. The key thing I took from the concert is she just continued going, how are you feeling? You know? And when she did this, the audience were just like, crazy, right?
Yeah, we're feeling
good. But the key to that was, you know, what I took away from the concert was it was always tuning in with your audience. It was asking the question and making sure that we're together, we're on track. And I kind of took it away as, you know, a real key learning is you got to ask, how are you feeling? What are you thinking at the moment? And, you know, an organization is like an organism, right? It's not straight cut. It's all over the place. It's complex. And
it's a combination of a lot of nervous systems coming in together, trying to do common goals and work. That is very organic, very moving all the time. For sure.
Which is what I love about business is the complexity of it being an organism. And yeah, how do you sort of have a single pulse, but be responsive to all of the moving parts? And that's, I guess, where you come down to that point of culture and people wanting different things. Really, really important, right?
And, you know, you mentioned that about those people that have work to do. You know, it's not the collaborative thing that we talked of earlier, where you got to have mind share and you got to figure out what each other is thinking. There are some people that are responsible for entering data or making sure things work in the back end of things. That doesn't require the same amount of vibe connection that the others do. And for a leader to an HR group or whoever to understand that the difference is important. So I have some clients where when I tell them this, I'm like, look, if the people who are doing the back office stuff that doesn't require as much collaboration don't want to come in and come to the party, why is that a problem? If that's their preference, let it be. If they're delivering on their goals, they're meeting your expectations, why is that a problem? But I do say that because work has traditionally been the community that people get that need for community from, that if people aren't coming into the office, if you do care about their well-being, again, it's an individual conversation to make sure that they're connected in something in their community, especially with the geographically dispersed workforce, just being able to check in and say, how are things going? Do you have people that you're going out and are you, you know, participating in community somewhere? And maybe that means if you've got a dispersed workforce and you've got people that are responsible for doing some of that, part of the benefits could be, you know, here's a little bit of money to go take a class in whatever you're interested in. So you're out getting community somewhere else, which says, I care about you. I don't want you just sitting at your desktop, but you also don't have to come to this office to get that well-being met. I think it's, again, it's just understanding who people are at an individual level versus I've created this thing and you have to be a part of my thing. Yeah, be a part of the work, but I don't think it's going to be like it used to be that you're all in or you're not in.
Yeah, well, you know, I guess we're sort of trying to create an energy, like you mentioned before, to vibrant. And that's the biggest challenge of a leader is actually laying down the space and the environment for energy to be consumed and then let that energy be delivered on through individuals' creative expression on what they do. And often that is like delivering beautiful work in detail. Often it's sort of bringing the joy to everyone at work. But, you know, in some regards, the leader's got to sort of create the environment and then step back from that environment, keep close to it, but let it sort of control its direction a little bit, as long as everyone's sticking with ultimately the core values of the organization, which is when, you know, we got to look at what are the core human values.
I think that gets kind of skewed a little bit too, back to my cult or culture conversation, is we're not trying to create clones of people that think the same way, but being able to be an individual, unique individual inside of a common goal of serving a customer some way is beautiful, but everybody is going to show up differently to that. Some people get tons of joy out of a meticulously designed spreadsheet system that, you know, and that's their like this thing, but they do it quietly and they don't have any need to talk about how much they love that thing. They just want to know they're doing good work. So I think affirmation is in the future far more of a driver of performance than we've allowed it to be in the past. In the past, it's been all about feedback. And really what people want to know is, am I safe here? Do you see me? Do you appreciate me? And shifting the leadership to more of an affirming kind of culture, I think is going to be a fundamental thing. I mean, Daniel Pink taught us in his book, Drive, around motivation, that autonomy was the number one driver of motivation. But you don't want to be isolated. You want to be autonomous and have somebody say, thank you for who you are. I see you. I like what you're doing. That's beautiful. Whether it's building a spreadsheet or selling a big deal.
Yeah, yeah. And listening, really listening to you, to the workforce at an individual level, like we were talking about earlier, it's got to be more human, more listening, more tuning in, like I was saying, how you're feeling, asking open questions, learning to shut up and listen, and also, I guess, demonstrating your listening by delivering something differently, you know, being responsive to the feedback you're getting.
And okay, here's my concern. Listening, I agree. 150,000% I agree that it's a key trait for leaders in now too, but in the future, for sure. I had the opportunity for 20 years to work for the Franklin Covey organization, and I taught a gazillion times the class, The 7 Habits of Highly Effective People by Dr. Stephen R. Covey.
Read the book a few times.
Me too. For 20 plus years, the aggregate report of the surveys, the self-surveys and the survey of your peers, the assessments that went out for the seven habits, 20 plus years running, the lowest scoring habit universally, all levels, but especially the top leadership, habit five, seek first to understand and then to be understood. For decades was the worst score on every single assessment. So we do not have an epidemic of great listening happening in the world today, let alone just the workforce. So that if you wanted to be a great leader in the future, if there was one bit of advice, I'd say it's learn to be a great listener. You could really differentiate yourself by that.
Love it. That's fantastic. I'm definitely going to take that away from today. And I guess as well, you know, if an employee is going to be opening up to their leader or their line manager, they're only going to do that if the environment allows that. As leaders, as managers, we have to change how we approach the process of listening. And because I guess with that fifth habit is about seek to be understood, I think you were saying.
Seek first to understand first and then to be understood. So I got to understand your perspective first before I derive my own opinion and share mine.
Absolutely. And I guess that's a two-way kind of aspect, you know, from a leadership perspective, but also from a workforce employee perspective. Employees also need to seek to be understood, and they need to have a confidence in their environment that they can freely do that. And that's probably the big key thing about collaboration and bringing culture together. So yeah, really interesting.
You know what? That brings me to a conversation and a thought from just the other day. Somebody was talking about how, like, my daughter is 22, how young professionals don't even want to have interactions with people. And the example that was given was when somebody rings the doorbell, my daughter will like hit the floor not to have to go to the door so they think nobody's home. Like even DoorDash, she does not want to have an interaction with the DoorDash person, right? But yet she is a commission salesperson in a retail environment and is the most engaging, great employee you've ever seen in your life. So it's different for different situations. And we just block all them into this category. And I'm like, I don't think that's it. But one of the things that came to mind for me is what happens in your first job shapes how you feel about work and how safe you are to share your opinions and to collaborate. And if you think about a lot of people's first jobs are usually in like food service industry or something interacting with the general public. And oftentimes you got a really shitty manager. You got somebody that hates their job, you know, not all of them. I'm overgeneralizing for this point, but there are a lot of people that get their first work experience and have this awful manager experience and shut down. And then they're like, work is bad. Work is hard. I'm not safe. I don't want to share my opinion. And so it really got me thinking about if the future of work, like let's just riff on this crazy idea. If the future of work involved that we paid greater attention to the kinds of jobs that people enter in their first experiences as the training grounds of what we want in them as adults, and flip the script on frontline managers being more of the, you're responsible for the future of how this person experiences work. Like that would be crazy. And the money-making model would need to be completely changed and better understood. But that is a big factor in why some of the folks early in their career have a hard time sharing or interacting, is because they worked at the ice cream shop and got treated like crap when they were 16 and they're afraid of the work.
Yeah, you just can't blame them for being afraid. And sort of reminds me of psychotherapy along the lines of your first 1,000 days as a child really shapes who you are within your adulthood. And, you know, it's a discovery process of who you are, but down the track. And if you have a bad start, it can be really challenging. And that's when we can have mental health issues and all sorts of challenges crop up. So if you were experiencing that in business, in our first 1,000 days of business, it's going to freak us out. And yes, we're not going to be able to work with trust and confidence going forward. So we're not going to bring our best to the business. However, I think there's some big challenges because we are still in the dark ages in a lot of industries and a lot of businesses and a lot of leadership is still that old style, and it's not good. It's not healthy. And some very big, large organizations are doing it very poorly. It's just not going to be accepted in the future.
That's where we learn about leadership and management, is from those experiences. And like, okay, that's what it takes to get promoted. You're right. It changes everything about our patterns of expectation, which also leads me to believe that the entire education system, especially here in the U.S., needs to be completely start over from scratch. It's a disaster. Because why aren't we teaching leadership and business skills from early? I mean, commerce is what makes the world go round. Why don't we teach commerce instead of some of the things that get reinforced? But that's a whole nother podcast episode we probably don't have time for today. But it does make me think I do need to get some educators on the show to talk about that at some point.
Mm. And I think also setting for the workforce to take control back in regards to, you don't have to be treated like shit in the workplace. Yes, sometimes you got to knuckle down and put up with it, but this is the perfect time to be going, no more, thank you, and I am planning my exit.
Because how many million jobs did you say are going to be available?
There is going to be about, I think it's about 13 million jobs being created and about 6 million jobs, which are going to, and food industry is going to be one of those places which are going to be massively losing staff. You know, if they don't start to love their staff, and I was in New York a couple of months ago and I got great experience from your front of house. I love it.
Oh, but good.
I don't know what happens behind the scenes. The front of house was brilliant. But there's going to be 7 million new jobs created by 2030. And if there's not a change in regards to how you treat your staff, you're just going to be losing out. And I think staff, you know, employees of the workforce need to be, they need to be really thinking now, there's huge opportunity and you don't have to put up with a bad culture, a bad boss. Start planning now and look for those organizations that are doing well. They're going to excel and they're just going to take control just through what you're saying. You're having open environments, listening, being reactive, responsive.
It has not to be that way in so many places, but culturally it just has been that way. So it just perpetuates, because there's a grocery store here in the States called Trader Joe's, and it's a fairly small chain, and they are brilliant. You walk in and every employee is happy. They're glad to be there. They stop and they ask you. They're trained to like talk about your life, not just how can I help you with this. And people love to work there for very little money. And anybody that's kind of in between jobs, even professionals that need a little money in between things, will often go work at Trader Joe's because they know it's nice. People are nice there. Customers love it. Employees love it. And so there are examples of people that have it figured out, that those are the companies that somebody's going to have to go study, because bigger isn't always better.
Yeah. That sounds aspirational from an organization doing that.
Amazing.
Yeah. Yeah. My partner was making an inquiry into Sophia University in California the other day, put out the inquiry, you know, contact, and immediately the responses that came back were just fantastic. We were so excited to hear from you. I'm looking forward to engaging with you. And so that, I guess the brand, the front end brand promise was, is beautiful, you know, and I think one of the things for organizations, we're going to deliver the brand promise, but we're not going to deliver the brand delivery, you know, which the brand experience, unless our people lead.
Ooh, I love the differentiation of those. The brand promise versus the brand delivery have to be in alignment.
Yeah, brand delivery's got to meet brand promise. And if you get that wrong, it's a recipe for disaster, right? But if you get it right, you're going to make magic. And that's where, you know, I think organizations need to, the only way you're going to deliver your brand promise, one, good process, obviously, within the organization, but the team have to bring themselves to the process and the delivery of what the organization's promised. And if they can do that, customers are just going to keep coming back because they want to get those experiences time after time with consistency. So, yeah.
People want to be treated like a human. And it's the only thing that makes it hard is that we don't have enough examples of greatness in it yet. And I think as the Trader Joe's of the world and the university that you talked about, as those become more commonplace, I think we'll get this ripple effect that will take place, that I want to be a part of that movement. That's why this conversation and this book that I'm writing is so important to me. I want to be part of the help to make that happen.
Yeah, right. Yeah, well, I'm excited to read your book. When's that coming out?
Well, it's still in its infancy. Let's just say it's in smattering of notes in multiple notebooks. And hopefully this weekend, it's going to start making its way to organization of sticky notes on the wall, which is the process I use to write. And a big part of it is because I want to have more of these conversations before I take any kind of stance or recommendation to people, and understanding it is as this podcast is kind of the research.
Yeah, I agree. I think this sort of research before you do anything like that is really important. The engagement process is the backbone of delivering the next level of content. And you know, I'm doing the same in regards to creating your employee or stakeholder engagement surveying solution. And, you know, I think it's going to take, we already provide services in the space, but to re-engineer it, rethink it, you know, reinvent it, you need to go deep within your marketplace. So for me, I've got a year ahead of me of the same thing, engagement research, before I actually turn dirt and actually get down to work on enhancing and building the next stage of our product. So love what you're doing.
Thank you. And I think that what you said is there is very important too for the future of work is that people now are less trusting of large data points for obvious reasons over the last few years. And so I don't think it will be enough that you gather research from a data perspective, but it also research will need to be heartbeat to heartbeat, conversation to conversation, and getting the context of the data, because data without a story is just debatable. But if you gather data and then you have a story of the context around why I feel this way or what this is going to allow me to do, that gets at the human experience, and that will become an integral part of decisions being made for business, I believe. Yeah. I don't know. There's so many places we could go with this. I'm glad we're connected. Let's stay that way.
Absolutely. Yeah. Thanks, Rebecca, for inviting me on the show. That's exciting for me too.
How can we stay connected to you and learn more about what you're doing? Where can people go to connect with you?
Yeah, certainly. So I am doing a little bit of work on LinkedIn. It's kind of like a work in progress, and I'm just sort of trying to develop my thinking in the space of ESG and purpose-led leadership, and just sort of trying to express my thinking and developments and direction and progress in my own business. And so you can find me probably just searching Brendan Rolston on LinkedIn, and you know, join up. And any questions that people have, just, you know, direct message me as well. And that's the best place to find me at the moment. I'm sort of just working around that space.
Well, I believe that the power of the small and mid-sized business is profound for the future of work as more people become a little more disenchanted with bigger isn't always better. And I'm excited to see what happens with small and mid-sized business when they start to realize the power that they really have in commerce. And so I'm thrilled that you're a part of that and that you're making your voice heard and known and proactively reaching out and say, yeah, let's talk about it. I think that's important. It shouldn't be that, you know, the top 10 big companies in the world are the ones, only voices that we listen to. Your voice matters. So thank you.
Thanks heaps, Rebecca. Looking forward to tuning into more of your podcasts and hearing some more of your interviews. So thanks for having me on board today. Really appreciate it.
Yeah, you bet. I'm not coming down. I never left it on the ground. I'm not coming down. Thanks for listening to this episode. I would love it if you would go to Apple Podcasts and leave a rating and a review. And then you can go to RebeccaFleetwoodHessian.com and join the Badass Women's Council. And if you really want to take a deeper dive, join the movement of 1,000 thriving women. There's amazing Thrive tools there for you today. Love you, mean it. I'm not coming down.
Hey y'all, fun fact, if you like the music for the podcast, that is actually my son, Cameron Heshen. And I would love it if you would go to Spotify and iTunes and follow him and download some of his other music. My personal favorite is TV Land.